Wonderful job, band. I can see everybody at home smiling already. Yes. Well, I welcome you to this day when we are celebrating, observing Memorial Day. And one of the things I'd like to do is to give you something of a history lesson. It may seem a little bit boring at first, but I think there's some things that are helpful for us to know about as we enter into Memorial Day, not just as humans, but as spiritual humans. And I think having more familiarity with the context in which we're observing this day will make a difference for us. So let me share some facts with you. While the first commemorative Memorial Day events weren't held in the United States until the late 19th century, the practice of honoring those who have fallen in battle dates back thousands of years. The ancient Greeks and Romans held annual days of remembrance for loved ones, including soldiers, each year, festooning their graves with flowers and holding public festivals and feasts in their honor. In Athens, public funerals for fallen soldiers were held after each battle. One of the first known public tributes to the war dead was in 431 BC. When the Athenian general and statesman Pericles delivered a funeral oration praising the sacrifice and valor of those killed in the Peloponnesian War, a speech that some have compared in tone to Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. As the Civil War here neared its end, thousands of Union soldiers held as prisoners of war were herded into a series of hastily assembled camps in Charleston, South Carolina. Conditions at one camp, a former racetrack near the city's citadel, were so bad that more than 250 prisoners died from disease or exposure and were buried in a mass grave behind the track's grandstand. 3 weeks after the Confederate surrender, an unusual procession entered the former camp. On May the 1st, 1865, more than 1,000 recently freed slaves and a handful of white Charlestonians gathered in the camp to consecrate a new proper burial site for the Union dead. The group sang hymns, gave readings, and distributed flowers around the cemetery, which they dedicated to the martyrs of the race course. In May 1868, General John Logan, the commander-in-chief of the Union veterans group known as the Grand Army of the Republic, issued a decree that May 30th should become a nationwide day of commemoration for the more than 620,000 soldiers killed in the recently ended Civil War. On Decoration Day, as Logan dubbed it, Americans should lay flowers and decorate the graves of the war dead, whose bodies now lie in almost every city, village, and hamlet churchyard in the land. According to legend, Logan chose May 30th because it was a rare day that didn't fall on the anniversary of any Civil War battle, though some historians believe that the date was selected to ensure the flowers across the country would be in full bloom. In 1868, General Logan ordered his post to decorate graves, quote, with the choicest of flowers of springtime. We should guard their graves with sacred vigilance. Let pleasant paths invite the coming and going of reverent visitors and fond mourners. Let no neglect, no ravages of time testify to the present or to the coming generations that we have forgotten as a people the cost of a free and undivided republic. Today, Washington, D.C.'s Logan Circle and several townships across the country are named in honor of this champion of veterans and those killed in battle. Even before the war ended, women's groups across much of the South were gathering informally to decorate the graves of Confederate dead. In April 1886, the Ladies Memorial Association of Columbus, Georgia, resolved to commemorate the fallen once a year. However, Southern commemorations were rarely held on the standard day, with observations differing by state and spread out across much of the spring and early summer. Americans embraced the notion of Decoration Day immediately. That first year, more than 27 states held some sort of ceremony with more than 5,000 people in attendance at a ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery. By 1890, every former state of the Union had adopted it as an official holiday. But for more than 50 years, the holiday was used to commemorate those killed just in the Civil War, not in any other American conflict. It wasn't until America's entry into World War I that the tradition was expanded to include those killed in all wars. And Memorial Day was not officially recognized nationwide until 1971, with America deeply embroiled in the Vietnam War. Although the term Memorial Day was used in the 1880s, the holiday was officially known as Decoration Day for more than a century, when it was changed by federal law. 4 years later, the Uniform Monday Holiday Act of 1968 finally went into effect, moving Memorial Day from its traditional observance on May 30th to a set day, the last Monday in May. For almost as long as there's been a holiday, there's been a rivalry about who celebrated it first. Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania, bases its claim on an 1864 gathering of women to mourn those recently killed at Gettysburg. In Carbondale, Illinois, they're certain that they were first, thanks to an 1866 parade. There are even two dueling Columbus challengers, one in Mississippi, the other in Georgia, who have battled it out for Memorial Day supremacy for decades. Only one town, however, has received the official seal of approval from the United States government. In 1966, 100 years after the town of Waterloo, New York, shuttered its businesses and took to the streets for the first of many continuous community-wide celebrations, President Lyndon Johnson signed legislation declaring the tiny upstate village of Waterloo the official birthplace of Memorial Day. In the spring of 1915, bright red flowers began poking through the battle-ravaged land across northern France and Flanders, which is in Belgium. Canadian Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae, who served as a brigade surgeon for an Allied artillery unit, spotted a cluster of poppies shortly after serving as brigade surgeon during the bloody Battle of Ypres. The sight of the bright red flowers against the dreary backdrop of war inspired McCrae to pen the poem In Flanders Field, which many of you are familiar with, in which he gives voice to the soldiers who had been killed in battle and lay buried beneath the poppy-covered grounds. Later that year, a Georgia teacher and volunteer war worker named Miona Michael read the poem in Lady's Home Journal and wrote her own poem, We Shall Keep the Faith, to begin a campaign to make the poppy a symbol of tribute to all those who died in war. The poppy remains today as a symbol of remembrance to this day. So that'll give you a bit of an idea about how we came to have Memorial Day as we have it right now. Now, as we observe Memorial Day, it gives us the opportunity to do at least three things. We are encouraged and supported in, first of all, sharing our grief. It is a time to mourn those who died in all the wars that have come before. It is a time for us to feel our sadness and to share our sadness. And I've shared with you before a quote that I often use in interesting enough, in weddings and in funerals. It says that when companions share a sorrow, their sorrow is halved. And when they share a joy, that joy is doubled. So on this Memorial Day, when we're encouraged to grieve and feel that sadness, we have the support of all those around us who are sharing in that same experience as we remember that past, remember all of those who gave their lives. Many of those people who have died, the men and women who have died in the battles, did so out of loyalty to the United States. Many of them didn't really believe in what was happening, that they weren't sure that what was being done was right, but still, out of loyalty to their home they served, and many of them died. So this day gives us an opportunity to mourn them and to observe the grief and the sadness that we feel. The other thing that Memorial Day encourages us to do is that is to honor those who have gone before. We've already heard from the history that there was a great focus on not forgetting and not letting those people's deaths be in vain. So it is a day of honoring to say we celebrate the brave deeds that were done. And all over our country, we have memorials remembering those who have served and honoring them. I remember standing for the only time in front of the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., and being incredibly moved by that huge monument with all those names on it. And though I didn't know anybody at that time who had died in Vietnam, I walked up and just found one name and touched it and spoke that name to give honor to that man who died. So this is an opportunity for us on this, what we call Memorial Day, to honor those who have gone in that way. The third thing that Memorial Day gives us a chance to do, and that is to learn. Jimmy Carter, in his address when he won the Nobel Peace Prize, said, "War may sometimes be a necessary evil, but no matter how necessary, it is always an evil, never a good. We will not learn to live together in peace by killing each other's children." And he went on to say a little bit later that when we enter war, we should enter war grieving. And we know that as we look back in history of the wars that the United States has participated in, there have been things that have happened out of personal vengeance. There have been battles that have been put together out of revenge. There have been battles that have been fought out of hate. So we realize that that past of war is not a good one. It is not a pretty one. And it is important that we learn from that. As we look back on some of these battles, some of the wars, we realize that if a little more time had been taken, a little more diplomacy, a little more willingness to talk, a little more willingness to compromise, that thousands and thousands of lives could have been saved. And the impact on the economy, on the global consciousness that war brings to us could have been avoided had a little more time been put into it. Hopefully we have learned something from that and learned to be able to take a different tack when it comes to possible conflict, to be able to bend a little bit, to be able to be willing to be compassionate to others and be willing to see other people's positions. Certainly we have learned from that. And Memorial Day gives us that chance to reflect and to see what went wrong, what was done not done properly, and what was so hurtful and so harmful and so unreasonable, and we can do it differently from this point forward. Now, as we share in this Memorial Day, and we've heard the history already of how it came to be what it is, we find ourselves in this interesting situation in the middle of this pandemic. Is there a connection? Could there be anything that we could connect with Memorial Day and being in the middle of this COVID-19 pandemic? I think there is. Because I think what's happening to us right now in our country, where our financial world is in a mess, our political world is in a mess, our work world is in a mess, there's so much going on. Are we just going to endure this and get through it? Are we going to stick our head in the sand? What's going to happen? Well, I think that this situation gives us the same opportunities as Memorial Day does for us. First of all, it gives us a chance to grieve, to feel sad. As I mentioned already to you, we've lost one of our own flock to the virus, and there have been many, many deaths along the way. And it's appropriate for us to take time to grieve for that and to feel the sadness for those who have lost family members, and mothers and fathers and even children. And this virus is non-discriminatory. It goes after everybody, no matter what. No matter what your social status is, no matter what your ethnicity is, your gender, it doesn't matter at all. So this is a time that would serve us to take time to grieve, to feel the sadness of the challenge that we're in the midst of right now. The other thing that we can do in this time is honor those, not only those who have died, but those who are serving. One big difference in where we are now is that when there's war, even if we don't like the war, we know what's happening. We know why it's happening. We know what brought it on. With this virus, we're just blindsided by it. We don't really know where it came from, why it came from, and how it got loose, and what's going on. And the scientists are struggling now to try to understand. I read an article the other day. It says that this virus is like nothing they've ever seen before. It's doing things in the human body that no other virus has ever done. So nothing that we've done before really helps in trying to cope with it. We've got to come up with something new to do it. And we're in the process of doing that. And honoring those people who are in the midst of this, those who are on the front lines, and many of them working without sufficient protective equipment in their work. The doctors and the nurses, all the medical workers, all the emergency workers, the police, all those who are out on the front line. It is appropriate for us to take time to honor them, to appreciate them for what they are giving to us and how they're serving us in that way. So we have that opportunity. This situation doesn't really force us to, but it encourages us to. It gives us the opportunity to pay them that honor. Then we also hopefully can learn something from this. George Santayana in 1905 said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." And then Winston Churchill, addressing the House of Commons in 1948, slightly modified that, and he said, "Those who fail to learn from history are condemned to repeat it." So in this situation we're in now with the pandemic, that there are things here we need to learn. There are things here we need to recognize. We realize now that there were many experts telling us that this thing was coming. There were many experts telling us we aren't ready for this, we aren't prepared for this. And unfortunately, many of our leaders didn't listen, and they let us down. And I can say this without pointing to any one person or any one political party or anything like that, but the fact is that the leadership in our country failed us. We were not prepared for this, and we're still not. And many of those experts are still not being listened to. Are we going to learn from this so that the future can be different for us? Are we going to learn from the strangeness of this virus, how to deal with something else that comes along? Are we going to give the support to those who are trying to make that happen? Are we going to learn from it, or are we doomed to repeat it? Let us pray, dear God, help us to see what we need to learn and how we need to change ourselves to make this thing different for us in the future. Now, I am a confirmed optimist, but I'm also a realist. We see these facts, but beneath that, there's something else. And those of us who are on the spiritual path can look at this differently. Because when we're in this situation where what comes up for us is fear, we can turn back to our spiritual principles and call those things up that do not change. We know that our spiritual teachings are those things, we call them principles because they do not change. So in the middle of that fear, we go back to what would calm that fear. In the middle of what happens when we become angry about what's going on, again, we bring up and bring forward our spiritual principles that we can go back to and that we can stand on, that we can learn from, and we can find strength from. So in the midst of all the challenges that we face right now, our spiritual principles support us, and we have those with us, we have those within us. No matter where we are, no matter what is going on, those truths are in us and they're ours and they're available to us. Let us in our fear not lose that. Let us in our anger not lose that. And let us not in our loneliness lose that. But know that we have that to come back to. And in the midst of the chaos, we can find peace. In the midst of sorrow, we can find joy. In the midst of loneliness, we can find presence. That is ours. I'd like to close by mentioning that in December of 2000, Congress passed and then President George Bush signed into law the National Moment of Remembrance Act. And this law calls all Americans to pause wherever they are on Memorial Day at 3 p.m., and take a moment of silence in honor of those who have come before and those who have died and those gone before us. And all the memorial services or Memorial Day sermons that I've preached since 2000, this is the first time I've seen this. So this was new for me, that we have this law. And it doesn't command, but it calls for us to take a minute at 3 p.m. on Memorial Day to remember. So I invite you to hold that in your mind for tomorrow at 3 p.m., and you can set your phones and alarms and have somebody remind you. At 3 p.m., take a minute of silence and reflect on what Memorial Day means for us. Take a moment to experience the sadness, to experience the honor, and to make a commitment to learn from it. And let us bring together in that our being in the midst of this pandemic. Hold in that minute of silence the hope, for something coming forward that will help in this pandemic. Hold forward the hope that the scientists who are studying are going to find the key to unlock the mystery, to be able to find the things that we need to treat this virus and to get past all of this. So tomorrow at 3 o'clock, for a minute of silence, I will join you in spirit. Let us hold together that which we know to be true. God bless you.
And one of the things that is unchanging is principle. Principle being God, the higher power around us, but definitely through us. And that higher power, your higher power, is right there in your mind. And we can call forth all of the abilities God has given us and remember to use them. Definitely our imagination, which our curiosity brings forth, and definitely our strength, our love. So many abilities that we have. So let us always remember that principle of giving. Give to each other, give to people you don't know. I've been so pleased that within our congregation, we've answered the call a couple times for a meal train to those in our group who had a loss or a challenge where they couldn't provide food for themselves. So meal train is one way. Phone calls, holding each other in prayer is quite another. And of course, there's shopping. Amazon Smile is right there. And you know what? Some of you have been shopping, and that's great. Those of us who have the ability, come on, support our economy. So I believe we received somewhere, was it Susie or Ron, $56 maybe this week that Amazon Smile sent every now and then as your accumulated giving shows on their books. They send out a very small percentage, but nevertheless, it's $56 that we can certainly use as we go forward. So Amazon Smile is one way you can give, by just going to smile.amazon.com, and all your usual Amazon orders and everything else to do with Amazon is right there. Just like always, choose Unity Church of Pompano Beach, Inc. as your charity. Of course, there's other ways to give, always through our donate button. We even have a way to text your donation in. So we look forward to your giving, and with great joy and gratitude, we thank you because you have been giving. You have continued your giving just as if we were meeting here. And that is such a sign of a strong, healthy, spiritual community. So again, we thank you for all of that. And I know you'll enjoy giving tonight when our band makes their wonderful concert for us. So let us now take an offering. Use that donate button. Write out your check and mail it to the church. Our address is on our website. Or perhaps you've already given for the month. So whatever it is, let's focus our thought on our ability to give. We all have the ability to give something. As we turn our prayerful thoughts, divine love flowing through me blesses and multiplies all that I am, all that I give, and all that I receive. And so it is. Amen.